Japanese Features with Eric Armstrong. I'm going to talk a little generally off the cuff about doing a Japanese accent and how it might be different from other dialects or accents that you might have done before. To begin with, a Japanese accent is different from, say, a dialect like a standard British dialect or an Irish dialect, in that the speakers we're assuming are second language learners of English. Their first language is Japanese. English is their second or third, fourth language. This means that their ability to think in English may be slightly different. Different characters who speak with Japanese accents have different facility at speaking with that accent. So that could lead to things like hesitation, searching for the right word, grammar issues. In terms of the accent itself, we'll see how Japanese speakers generally will be applying their own inner logic of Japanese onto English, and that will include things like the sounds of consonants, the sounds of vowels, the rules about how Japanese language works applied to English. As a speaker becomes more sophisticated at speaking English, then they adopt more and more of the English pattern, the way of doing it in English-speaking countries. So let's talk generally about accents. We can often divide one accent from another accent of English by talking about the consonant and the vowel quality of R. We think of R as a consonant in the alphabet. We categorize the letter R as a consonant letter. However, in spoken English, R functions more like a consonant when it begins a syllable. So we have a word like rose, red, riot. Those initial R's are very abrupt, and they are there regardless of what kind of accent you do. If you've got a British accent, you will say rose, red, riot with an R. R's where the spelling has the R after the vowel are a little different. In some British accents, for instance, a word like here, there, poor, will lack R coloring. Here, there, poor. So we classify accents like British accents that lack R coloring as non-rhotic, lacking R coloring. And Japanese, as an accent, can sometimes be spoken in a way that lacks R coloring. So we'd have consonant R, but not vowel R. Japanese always has R at the beginning of a syllable. The nature of Japanese generally is that we have either pure vowels in a syllable, a, i, u, e, o, or we have consonant followed by vowel. So, ka, ki, ku, ke, ko, sa, shi, su, se, so, ta, ti, ta, chi, tsu, te, do. So they use these clusters. They call them singular mora, plural more, sometimes called moras. A mora is used to build a word. So a word will be built out of a number of these chunks. We think of them like syllables, though sometimes their mora function differently from syllables. So mora typically is more about the way words are written in Japanese. Let's just a little digression for a moment. Japanese writing, there are three different styles of writing. Two of those styles, hiragana and katakana, are what we would call a syllabary. So in these, the character shapes are associated with a sound. So there is a symbol for each of the five vowels, a, i, u, e, o. Then each of those more gets a single symbol. So kakikukeko. Those can be used to spell words phonetically by the sound of them. The other syllabary is called katakana, and it is used to differentiate foreign loan words from Japanese words. So if I was to write the word for baseball, besuboru, in Japanese, I would use katakana to write that out. The last form of Japanese writing is called kanji, sometimes called Chinese characters. They are symbols that were borrowed from Chinese, and they've adopted Japanese sounds. So most of these kanji characters have multiple pronunciations. They could mean a variety of different things, and they would be pronounced in several different ways. So it's a very layered, complex written speech form. When you look at written Japanese, you will see a combination of kanji, hiragana, and some katakana for loan words. So the final thing about writing is that Japanese also have something called romaji, which is a romanization, a way of taking Japanese words and language and writing it out using Latin characters, so the alphabet that we use. So if you've seen Japanese written out in a way that you can sort of read naturally, that would be romaji. And there are some rules about how one learns to read romaji to match it, because it's not just like reading English. The rules of English are not directly applied to romaji. So we're on our way with a little exploration of Japanese. Let's talk about some things about the sound of Japanese and getting it into your mouth. Japanese is associated with a couple of stereotypes. The stereotype about gender is that Japanese men tend to press their voices very low. So you get the assumption about the Japanese very low for men. That's a big cliche, a stereotype we associate it. And the little girl voice that we associate with women's voices for Japanese. There is some real truth to this, and Japanese media reinforces it. If you were to watch anime in Japanese, the Japanese characters for women typically have much higher, girlier voices. The characters for men have much lower voices. That doesn't mean that all Japanese men or women fit the stereotype. And in fact, it is in my experience not the case that all Japanese men have these very low voices. Some men work to develop a very low voice, but many Japanese men have quite high voices. Similarly, many Japanese women have deep chest-centered resonance and a lower vocal quality. It gives them authority. So some Japanese women seeking a sense of authority will lower their voice in the same way that Western women will do that. Let's talk a little bit about resonance. So the most important feature, I think, that affects resonance has to do with how open or closed the mouth is for a Japanese speaker. Compared to North Americans, I would say the Japanese don't open their mouths as much. There is a general sense, a cultural idea, that showing the inside of your mouth is impolite. And so there's no visible tongue. And in fact, when people laugh, they frequently cover their mouths so that people can't see the inside of their mouth. So generally, the idea is to keep your mouth shut a little bit. And I think that helps to make some of the sounds that are part of Japanese. There is a very forward sense to Japanese that the resonance can be bright, not in a kind of nasal, as no business like show business kind of way, but resonance on the hard palate. So when you're exploring forward placement, buzzy forward quality. Now, there are also very back vowels. So, oo in English, oo, sometimes oo, not very far back. But oo can be made much further back in the mouth. That means that the arching of the tongue, oo, further back. Accompanying this backness is a compression that comes from not rounding the lips and keeping the mouth quite closed. So the tendency when we first hear this sound is to assume that it's made in the middle of the mouth, sort of like an sound. This is not the case. It's a back version of with no lip rounding. So start by saying with your lips nice and rounded in a kiss-like shape. And then spread your lips into a smile-like shape, but keep saying ooh. So we start rounded. Ooh, ooh, ooh. So your lips should make sort of a slit-like shape, as if you were an English letterbox, rather than a rounded kiss. Ooh, ooh. So that's a very important vowel in Japanese, because so many words use the ooh sound. Also, the compressed quality affects some consonant sounds. And so I think this ties that back ooh sound with a tendency not to use the front edge of the tongue. Many Japanese speakers articulate consonants where we would normally articulate with the front edge of our tongues on the gum ridge, things like ta, da, na, la. We do that with the front edge of the tongue behind our upper front teeth. They tend to keep the front edge of the tongue behind the lower front teeth and use the blade of the tongue behind that front edge to articulate up towards the gum ridge. So, na, la, ra, that's a tap. So the front edge of the tongue would come up for that. So we're not going ra. We'll talk about that a little bit more greater detail later, but the front edge of the tongue is going to come up for a very brief la. So I have na and la, ta and da. The tendency for ta and da is to say it not with the edge of the tongue, but maybe a half a centimeter back from the front edge of the tongue. Ta, da. Then also, sha is not made with the tongue curling. Sh. You may be used to making sh by rounding your lips and curling the front edge of your tongue back a little bit. Try making the sh sound with the front edge of the tongue down and that spot that's about a centimeter back from the front edge arching up towards the gum ridge. Sh, sh, sh. It may make a brighter sounding sh quality. So with your lips rounded, we get a low sh. With your lips spread and that backer part of your tongue making it sh, sh, a higher sound. He, for instance. So you want to notice that. And when we combine that sound with T to make a chi, chi sound, it's not ch, chi the way we would normally make it, chi. If you were saying the word cheese, for instance, your tongue is probably curling back on itself slightly. Cheese. So the front edge of the tongue touches down just before the release of that, a bit back from your upper front teeth. In Japanese, the front edge of the tongue stays down, and so the contact point before the explosion of ch, ch, ch is made a little bit back from the front edge of the tongue on the gum ridge, or slightly behind it. Ch, ch, ch. Similarly, sa and za tend to be made with the tongue tip down. Sa, za. Sa, za. For some people, that's their natural way of making sa and za, is with the tongue tip down. If you lift the front edge of your tongue, then you want to try this tongue tip down version. Sa, za. So, this closed sense of the mouth, that is going to help you find this very closed sense of Japanese. That's an important starting place to the articulation quality associated with Japanese. Japanese is, we've spoken a little bit about these syllables, the mora, the more in plural. when Japanese speakers speak, they don't speak the same way that English speakers do. When we speak, there's kind of a rhythm to the way that we speak. If I speak an even tempo, the stressed syllables are going to fall on this rhythmical beat that underlies what I say. And it doesn't matter how many important words that I say, they're roughly going to fall on this stressed rhythm. And it's fairly even and not that disrupted, unless I get a little confused and I need to slow down. But generally speaking, my speech goes on in a rhythmic way, and I make those important words land on that beat that fits in my speech. In that happening, in between those little tappy, clappy sounds that I was making, there are a lot of unstressed syllables, unimportant syllables, less important, unemphasized syllables. In Japanese, generally speaking, every syllable is roughly the same. Now, there are a few exceptions. For instance, in a word like, desu, that u on the end of it, desu, gets dropped, and generally you just hear desu. You'll often hear these final u or i sounds at the ends of words following a voiceless consonant, one without voice, and that they just disappear. We just get that final consonant. But generally speaking, each syllable gets, each mora gets the same amount of time. Now, there are a couple of weird things about this. One of the syllables is the nasal consonant. So if we have a word ending with an N, ng takes the same amount of time as one of the moray. Also, in the middle of a word, an N will, or a nasal consonant of any kind, will take the same time as the syllables on either side of it. As in the word for good evening, konbanwa. So, konbanwa. The ng syllable, which is the nasal consonant, is the same length as the ko, or the ba, or the wa. Ko, ng, ba, ng, wa. Now, let's talk a little bit about that nasal consonant. That nasal consonant is kind of weird because they use one symbol to rule them all. But the way that N, M, NG consonant is articulated depends upon where it is in the word. If it's followed by a B-like sound, like in konbanwa, it's going to be like an M. Konban. And then at the end of a phrase, it's going to be like an NG. Bang. So, konbanwa. It's not konbanwa. Right? That N is reserved for certain places, usually when it's followed by a consonant that's articulated on the gum ridge, like T or D. So it's a very interesting sound that changes depending on how you're saying it, what context you're saying it in.